One thing that we do need to keep in mind during these days of unleavened bread is what we'll find over, actually, well, turn over with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. This is a news analysis, but I think it'd be worthwhile tying it in with what I hope to speak about a little bit more tomorrow. But here in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, it says in verse 6, it says, "Your glorying isn't good. Don't you know that a little leaven leavens a whole lump? Purge out therefore the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you are unleavened." They were going into the time of unleavened bread, and they were in that time. It says, "For even at Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us." There was the sins had been forgiven, and they were then in the days of unleavened bread. "Therefore let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." Now the context of this particular passage is quite interesting, because in the preceding chapters, as he led up into chapter 5, he was really working until he actually got to chapter 5, where he was saying that there's commonly reported commonly among you that there's fornication among you, and such fornication, and so on, and starts dealing with a specific problem that was in the Corinthian church. But he starts to explain something to them. If you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 2, and explains just how different our understanding of things is. And as was brought out in the opening prayer, it was a case of the knowledge that we have been given is something absolutely vital, something that the world simply doesn't have. And as it says here in 1 Corinthians 2, in verse 6, it says, "Howbeit we speak wisdom among them that are being perfected," this is probably better translated, "yet not the wisdom of this world, nor of the princes of this world that come to nothing." In other words, the leaders of industry, the leaders of the banking world, the leaders of the governments and societies that we find ourselves in, and what we'll read about within the news, they don't have the wisdom. The wisdom we have is different. It says, "But we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world unto our glory." It fits into a perspective which goes back multiple thousands of years. In fact, it goes back probably millions of years, if you're looking at the rebellion of Satan that actually preceded it. It says, "Which none of the princes of this world," or the leaders, the leaders of industry, the leaders of the banking world, the people that you read about within the newspapers, "none of these princes of this world knew. If they had known, then they wouldn't have crucified the Lord of glory," because the same kind of attitude of mind you find within the leaders of the world at the Roman world at that time, that actually crucified Christ himself. He says, "But it is written, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, neither has entered into the heart of man the things that God has prepared for those that love him. But God has revealed them to us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searches the all things," yes, "and the deep things of God." And as it says down in verse 14, it says, "But the natural man doesn't receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him." Looking at the newspapers, and analysing the newspapers and the stories that we see, the truth is foolishness to those people that are writing them. And it says, "Neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned." What we have been given by God is spiritually discerned. It's a spirit that goes along with it. If we turn over to 2 Corinthians 4, again, as a prelude to this news analysis, and particularly I want to concentrate on the way in which we need to analyze the news with this understanding in mind. In other words, we're looking at the newspapers, realizing that they do not have the truth. In fact, what they have, and so often when you're reading the newspapers, you will find that they are twisting the truth, continually twisting the truth. One thing is being vied off against another. And the reason for this, again, is here in 2 Corinthians 4, it says in verse 1, it says, "Therefore, seeing we have this ministry of this word that's been given to us, this service, as we have received mercy, we faint not. But we've renounced the hidden things of dishonesty, not walking in craftiness," which again you'll find continually within newspapers, within the news reports that you read, there's a craftiness there. They are trying to manipulate for their own advantage. "Nor handling the word of God deceitfully, but by manifestation of the truth, commending ourselves in every man's conscience in the sight of God. But if our gospel is hid, if what we've really got to say, the heart and core of what the church has got to teach is hidden, it's hidden to those that are lost, that don't know the way, that literally have lost the way. And says, in whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of those that believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, that is the image of God, should shine to them. And Satan has blinded the mind. The shutters have come down in front of the eyes of the people that are writing the reports that we'll go and read in a little while. And the analysis simply isn't there. The truth isn't there. And the real heart and core of it is in verse 18. It says, while we look not at the things which are seen, but as the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And it is a battle between the things that are not seen. It is a battle. God is allowing Satan control at the present time. It's not a battle where God is losing, which is the way the churches in the world look at the situation or give the impression they're looking at the situation. But it is indeed a spiritual battle that is going on there. And it is also a spiritual approach that is being used within the world. And so what I've done is literally on the last 3 days, three, 4 days, something like that, I've just picked the newspapers up, gone through and just torn out pages where we can see this manipulation for people's selfish advantage. And when we read the newspapers, we need to be aware of this, that the reports that we'll be reading have been skewed to whatever direction they're particularly looking at. Here's one. It says, the interest-free, in quotes, credit card that isn't. Now, obviously, somebody had read in a newspaper, read an advertisement, and they'd seen an advertisement for a credit card. And it said, when Christine Smith applied for a new credit card, she thought she had snapped up one of the best deals on the market. The piece of plastic Abby gave her charged no interest on transferred debts for more than a year, while also offering 0% on all her spending in the first 3 months. So she could go ahead and spend and not pay any interest for the first 3 months, and in addition to that, have the balance could be transferred across and there wouldn't be any interest. And it says that this, Christine thought, would give her the chance to put her finances back on an even keel and reduce the £2,000 debt that she'd run up on her previous credit card. For the first couple of months, she used the cards occasionally on shopping trips to take advantage of the interest-free offer. But when she tried to repay the £400 that this added up to, she was shocked to see that the payment simply reduced the £2,000 balance that she'd bought with her Abbey. Until this was paid off in full, her, quote, interest-free spending would be clocking up interest at the rate of 15.9% per year. It's a lie. It's slewed. And again, what we need to be aware of is that that's the kind of thing that is continually within the papers, continually within the advertisements. It is, they'll tell you half, but they won't tell you all. They'll tell you that little bit that they want you to read, want you to see, but the whole picture is not displayed. Another one. This was on Thursday's paper, right in the front page of the Daily Telegraph. It says, Brown, banks must admit the truth. The impact of the credit crisis may be worse than feared. Banks must disclose the size of their debts from poor quality home loans, Gordon Brown said last night, amid signs the impact of the global credit crisis may be even worse than suspected. Now, if they haven't given you the truth, in other words, if they have to go ahead and admit the truth, then they haven't given you the truth. What's been given to us so far is not the truth. It is not the way it is. And again, it's the case of governments as well. It says, we must sharpen up, says Darling. Labour must sharpen up, in quotes, its act to revive the chance of winning the next election, as the Darling said yesterday. The Chancellor said that it was vital that the government had a clear message. Well, if it wasn't a clear message before, why is it suddenly got to be today? Well, it's because they want to win the next election. Another one says inflation for most families is twice the official rate. Now, how can inflation for most families be twice the official rate? Well, the only reason is the official rate is not true. The official rate has been slewed. It's been manipulated. It's been massaged. And I've seen certain aspects of the official rate. They bring in all the white goods and various things that people will buy only very, very occasionally, whereas the things that people have got to buy, the food, has gone up by, well, in certain cases, 70%, 80% in certain cases, certainly in the case of rice in these poor countries. And I say poor countries, it's also over here as well. And things linked to grain, which includes butter, includes eggs, it includes the basics that people buy. So I would say that it's more than even twice the official rate. That's the only, when you're looking at the food inflation, it's considerably more than the official rate. Another one here, this is a commentary. It says, why is everyone so worried about falling house prices? It says, if you study media reporting of our current economic discontents, you'll notice something strange. Rising fuel costs, utility bills, startling food price increases are represented as bad. But house price increases are considered good. So, again, what it is, in fact, is people have invested in their houses. They haven't invested in food, they've invested in the houses. So if the price of the house falls, then their investment is falling. But it's still a case that, you know, when we look at headlines like this, be aware that when you're looking at God's system and the way in which God has implemented the actual ownership of land, nobody owns the land. I mean, we all are here for a while and we die. And God says that you are sojourners with me. That's what God says in the law. And as far as the land is concerned, he puts it into the control of families. So families will come back every 50 years and they will have that land again every single time. It's going down through the centuries. But we don't find that today. No, we will find instead these supermarkets, these out-of-town supermarkets in most cases. And yet there will be no out-of-town supermarkets in the world tomorrow. It's impossible. How can an out-of-town supermarket exist? Unless there's a particular family that builds just for on their particular piece of land. That's the only way it would actually work. Another one, another area. GM crops can save us from the food shortages. There you go. The panacea for all time. It says, it's remarkable how rapidly the world has moved from worrying about deflation to worrying about inflation, from cheer to despondency about the reduction of poverty, and from the concerns about food surpluses to panic about shortages. The hand of rising food prices is suddenly seen everywhere, in the riots in Tibet against Chinese rule, in drastic measures in the Philippines, Egypt, India, many African countries to restrict the food exports, in calls for more aid, and even in the Bank of England's reluctance to cut interest rates as fast as American counterparts. For agricultural commodity prices, which is what we call food, to have more than doubled in the past 3 years is an astonishing and worrying turn of events. But in responding to it, we need to understand that the true nature of the problem, and we need to recognize that a big part of this problem is our own fault because of our, quote, now listen, notice what he's putting the two things together. Our ill-thought-out enthusiasm for using food to fuel cars, as well as stomachs, and because of our longer established, but also ill-considered opposition to the use of genetically engineered food to help us grow more food. So he linked, again, notice how that was done. It is a case you bring in one thing which is true, you slide something else in underneath, and you bolt the two together. But this is done continually. And he finishes up, he talks about Europe's unwillingness to accept even a trace of GM products in imported food stocks forces other countries' farmers to steer clear too. And since the EU is one of the wealthiest regions on the planet, our rejection has set back progress in the GM research and development hugely, and on it goes. Now that was on, that's the Telegraph, on Thursday. Is that the one I was looking for? Yeah. On the Mail on Wednesday, day before, which has probably sparked this comment within the Telegraph, which tends to be in favour of big business, is on page 4, GM crops are not the answer. And here, organic and small-scale farming could be better to fight famine, says the blueprint. And now this blueprint took 5 years to come actually put together. The article in the Telegraph the following day took 24 hours to put together, presumably. But here it says, genetically modified crops are not the solution to spiraling food prices or third world hunger. According to a powerful international report published yesterday, questions remain over their effect on human health and the environment, it warns. 60 governments, private industry, scientists, consumer groups and social campaigners have delivered a blueprint for global agriculture for the next 50 years, and it delivers a remarkable snub to Frankenstein foods and the industrialization of farming while offering a boost to organic and small-scale agriculture. The authors also warn against the rush to grow crops to be turned into fuel, and so on, it goes into that. It says the report was published simultaneously in the UK, Washington, Delhi, Paris, Nairobi and a number of other cities, and the US government was joined by Canada and Australia, which also are supporters of GM farming, in refusing to sign up to the initiative. Again, there are vested interests in there, and they will not go ahead and sign up to these initiatives. And it does make you wonder. It says bodies representing global biotech companies, which include the likes of Monsanto, also walked out of the discussions on the report after failing to get their way. The UK government has not yet signed up to the report, but Professor Watson indicates that it has the full support of the Prime Minister. Well, it is interesting that, again, you're looking at two different papers, both right-wing, one which is anti-GM food, the other one seemingly is a pro-GM food. And it does make you wonder what, in fact, is going to happen in that area, because it's almost as if the gods of Egypt were, well, the gods of Egypt were destroyed. They were totally destroyed when the Exodus occurred. And certainly the gods of this our countries today, medical science being one, and biotechnology also, and the scientific community. And it does make you wonder whether, in fact, there is going to be a real disaster in that area, where, I don't know, was it where no grass grew? Was that the film that they had, where they were doing research into bio weapons, and they let it got out of the lab, and it finally not just affected grass, it affected all grass products, which includes rice, wheat, and barley, and that kind of product. That was the story of the film, anyway. Another one here. It says big supermarkets are creating inner city food deserts. It says the increasing number of suburban supermarkets is creating health problems for those living in inner city urban food deserts, according to research. The proliferation of supermarkets on the city outskirts has led to a decline of decent food outlets in the centre. And basically people that don't have a car, they don't have transportation, they can't get out there, and that's basically what is happening at the moment. It's interesting that in the same paper also, in a tiny, tiny little article tucked away in a corner, it said the residents of England's smallest town have launched a protest over plans for a Tesco superstore. The inhabitants of Manningtree, Essex, will say that it will rip the heart out of one of Britain's best-preserved Georgian shopping streets. So again, that was right in the corner. And when you're looking at the way in which God has set it up, as I said before, you're looking at the supermarkets being out-of-town supermarkets. They cannot exist. Limited companies, there's no concept of a limited company in God's system. And these out-of-town supermarkets are not going to be the way they are today in any way at all. It's going to be a very, very different system. All the time, underneath, when you're looking at the underlying message that comes across in these papers, again, depicting the lies, the mistruth, the twisting of reality, because you look at out of our eyes every single day when you get up. We live in an organized world. We live in a world that the idea of this world coming into existence out of nothing is absurd. How on earth can it possibly happen? But they have to try and then manipulate our minds to say that it has to happen almost an infinite number of times for this world to exist by chance, which is totally crazy. And yet, all the time, you also have these various notes from Darwin. This particular one, this is from Thursday. Online, Darwin's notes from the small islands. It says the first drafts of Charles Darwin's theory of evolution, which have never before been seen in public, are being published online for the first time today. For decades, one of the most important collections of primary materials in the history of science was available only to scholars at the Cambridge University Library, which had been given the 90,000 pages, papers and images by the Darwin family in 1942. They were delivered in parcels containing small packets of manuscripts wrapped in tissue paper on which the subject has been noted in Darwin's hand just as he had left them. And again, it gives the impression there's no question that obviously Darwinian evolution is correct. And yet, as I say, I've said many times, Darwinian evolution has been disproven because Darwinian evolution demands the existence of intermediary species all the way through the entire fossil chain, and they simply are not there. Darwin himself said that was the greatest problem for his theory, and he said that the only reason why they can't be found is that they haven't looked hard enough, and they've looked very, very hard indeed for 150 years. They are not there. There are jumps. So even if a process of evolution did take place, it is nothing like the process that Darwin explained. It is not the origin of species is not by the natural selection due to the survival of the fittest on each breeding stage. That just simply didn't happen, and it can be shown from the actual fossil record. When you're coming into government and the way in which government again is manipulating, you saw all the problems that we had down in Kenya shortly after we actually visited there. That was just last December, wasn't it? Last December we were there. It seems like a year ago, but it wasn't. It was a very short time ago. But almost as soon as we left, they had the elections and all the violence erupted. And the key players was the president, who claimed to have the vote of the people, and the opposition leader, who claimed that no, he didn't. And you think, well, here are two individuals striving against each other for the benefit of the country. That's the impression that's given. It, however, comes out here. It says Kenya's cabinet soaks up 80% of the budget. 80% of the budget. It says Kenya's expanded new government will spend 80% of the entire national budget on luxury vehicles, inflated salaries for ministers, and general running costs, a local anti-corruption court deemed yesterday. 80% of the budget of Kenya. And now you see why there was so much, so keen to actually gain the control. And it's very similar. You find it in the EU, we find it across the board. Again, another picture here. We've got three pictures side by side where Mr. Brown is seeing the president hopefuls, Mr. Obama, Mrs. Clinton, and John McCain. It says that Gordon Brown was in danger of wearing out the black and white tiled floor at the British Embassy in Washington yesterday during separate stage-managed photo calls with America's three presidential hopefuls. You know, you've got to have the three there because he's not, obviously does not know who in fact is going to win. But again, be aware, it's manipulation. It's politics. It's being seen in the right place. It's being seen with the right people all the time. And again, when you're looking at how Mr. Obama, it says, uses economic blues under Bush to woo the workers. In other words, it says Barack Obama yesterday mocked John McCain, the Republican president candidate, as an out-of-touch insider who thinks our economy has just made great progress under Mr. George Bush. And he was speaking in Irie as he prepared to embark today on a whistle-stop train journey through Pennsylvania. But the real, what is the real problem? You read an article like that and you think, well, he's, obviously Mr. Bush hasn't got it right. The economy is going down the tubes. What's the real problem? Where's the real problem actually lie? And the real problem, when you think about it, is the actual system itself. When you're looking at the system itself, you get somebody into power, they've got, 4 years, 5 years, whatever the period of power that they're able to hang on to power for, and they've got to then deliver their promises, do whatever they have to do, and then they've got to then fight another general election. And so you've got to give the people what the people you feel that the people want. You don't make policies that are going to last for perhaps 50, perhaps 100 years, which are the policies that you find within Scripture, 50 years being the Jubilee. You can't make a policy like that. 7 years, you can't make a policy like the land Sabbath, which your debts are cancelled every 7 years. That simply doesn't happen. You can't implement something like that and really make it all the way through. You've got to give the people what the people want, and the fundamental problem and the reason why we're getting into this economic mess, one of the main problems is this problem of democracy. Democracy has got to give the people what the people want. The people want cheap loans, so you give them cheap loans. The fact that they are subprime loans, well, you've got to keep the people happy. You've got to give them the ability to own property. And in all of this chaos that you find within the world, you find one institution that goes along relatively stably, or at least gives the impression. Here is a double page spread. This is from Friday's paper, yesterday's paper, and it gives the visit of the Pope to the United States, and there's a picture here of 45,000 people gathered in a baseball stadium, I think it is, in the National Stadium in Washington for the Papal Mass yesterday. That was on the Thursday. And it says, the pontiff calls for a stand against the fall in morality. And there is a certain voice there that gives a stability, a almost a spiritual stability, and it's the only one. I don't know of any other one that's around. The only other one is the Dalai Lama, perhaps. I mean, that's the other one that keeps on coming up in the news. But I'd just like to read you a little bit of an editorial. Was this Friday as well? Yes, on the same paper. On the Catholic question, it says, the primary motive for papal journeys is pastoral. During his current visit to the United States, that's been reflected in Benedict's remarks on paedophile priests and lay people who proclaim one thing in church on Sundays and another through their actions during the rest of the week. Yet in an election year, there's also an important political aspect to the Pope's presence. This, again, is something we've got to keep in mind. It's not just pastoral. He's not just going in there at this particular crucial juncture purely pastorally. It says, in one of the most religious countries in the world, Roman Catholics form about a quarter of the electorate. So the actual impact that that man is having by this visit at this time, this crucial time in the presidential elections, is very great. It says, the Democratic Party has traditionally been their first choice, but there was a marked switch to the Republicans in 2004. In an attempt to retain their loyalty, John McCain, the Republican president candidate, has formed a special committee under the chairmanship of the Kazan senator, Sam Brownback, and Mr. McCain's opposition to abortion and his liberal views on immigration should play well with the Catholics. His support for the Iraq war and the stem cell research less so. In the ding-dong battle of the other side of the political fence, both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, the would-be nominees, see in poverty relief, health care and environmental protection issues which should appeal to Catholic voters. Here, Mrs. Clinton has a decisive edge over a Democratic rival. He has not helped his cause by referring to bitter people in small Pennsylvanian towns who cling to guns and religion. The primary in the northeastern state next Tuesday could seal the fate of either candidate. The Pope has been careful to avoid giving ammunition to the spin doctors of either party, whether on abortion or the Iraq war. But his presence on American soil will remind the electorate of the moral dimension to their choice in November. Benedict may be a different personality from his predecessor, John Paul II, but the exalted nature of his official ensures that American politicians are paying keen attention to what he says. And again, it's not by pure blind chance. I'm almost positive. It's like when he made the comments he did about Turkey and about Islam, and when he visited Turkey and all these things that have happened. Don't think for a moment that he's just going in there on purely pastoral reasons. And it is this kind of analysis that we need to understand when we read the newspapers. We have been given a perspective, and that perspective is the way of God. It is the mind of God. It is the prophecies of God, the revelation that was given by Jesus Christ. It is something incredibly valuable. It's poo-pooed by the princes of this world, but eventually it will in fact form the basis to the very government of God over this earth. And it is something that we also need to right now use as we analyze the newspapers.